your territory defines your conception of international touring.
Let's say short-term, mid-term, and long-term goals of the concert place, and that's what we are discussing. And in this process, we are basically together forming this concert.
And how do you then communicate with a presenter who simply wants to fill the hall?
Who is our audience? And what is our audience interested in?
The economic pressure in the market, right? Everyone feels it. Subsidies are decreasing. Obviously, public funding is decreasing. And there's like an urge to just think about the question, how can artistic formats can become more economically independent, can become essentially profitable?
Have an increase of 15% of arts funding to artists. We went from 175 million to 200 million for 3 years.
All right, everybody, welcome to Business of Classical Music podcast. This time we do it live for the first time. Excited for that one. And maybe let me introduce you to my two guests, Hanni Lang, pianist and concert creator from Germany, and Gilles Doré, who is the director of a contemporary performing arts platform called Cina from Canada. My name is Leon. I'm an entrepreneur, so the podcast is basically a hobby project for us. We are active in the website space, as you can see in my hat that I'm wearing, and we sell to organizations, but also to artists around the globe with our AI software where you can build your website, but also our custom solutions. Maybe you want to add a couple of words to your introduction, and then we move forward to the topic, aligning artistic vision with market reality. Maybe you want to add something to your introduction, Hanni?
Yes, hello to everybody. So Hanni Liang is my name, and I'm a very traditionally trained pianist, let's say. And, you know, when you're in this road, you do everything what you need to do for or what you're taught to what you should do. And when you're on the way and, you know, reach maybe some peaks or dreams, then there's the long way down of the mountain and you just ask why. So why are you doing this? Why are you a musician? And that was my case, which brought me to the field I'm working in now as a pianist, but also as a teacher in the fields of new concert formats and the search on where can we, starting from the music, shift or turn little change of perspectives and involving the audiences in the concert and music experience.
Awesome. What about you, Gilles?
Well, I'm the executive director of the CINARS conference. CINARS, it's Conférence Internationale des Arts de la Scène. It's based in Montreal. We're established since 42 years now. Our mission is to support the effort of exportation of the contemporary dance, contemporary circus, music, theater, and interdisciplinary. We do a biennale every 2 years, of course, and we bring 1,300 professionals from 50 countries, which would be 330 programmers, about the same numbers of companies and agency, 250 in cultural institution, and close to 500 artists. We reach now 25,000 professionals all around the world, and it's mainly focused on the contemporary performing arts. So. And we're doing international mission per year like this one. We bring 5 to 10 companies to go abroad with 10 mission per year.
Right. Awesome. Thank you very much. So again, the reason why we chose the topic aligning artistic vision with market reality is simply due to the fact of the economic pressure in the market, right? Everyone feels it. Subsidies are decreasing. Obviously, public funding is decreasing. And there's like an urge to just think about the question, how can artistic formats can become more economically independent, can become essentially profitable. The podcast, as you can see, is called Business of Classical Music. So it's really about putting some light on how different stakeholders of the market monetize. And throughout the last 10 podcast episodes, which we did with concert hall directors, Concertos Dortmund, for example, or Andreas Schessel for München Musik, which is a private organizer, the general tenor is always, we expect artists to think more about that topic. Artists should know that budgets are decreasing and that economic viability plays a bigger role in our conceptual planning. And that is the reason why we chose that topic. And the key of today's panel is really to find out some key takeaways. How do perspectives need to shift? What are direct measurements that can be implemented? And maybe also some different just perspectives on that whole topic. Yeah. So maybe, Hani, let's start with you. You are an artist by yourself, and you create concerts from scratch, concert experiences, which are also quite not like standard repertoire stuff, right? So how do you usually create a concert experience from scratch?
So there are many different ways to start. It can be a theme of a festival, for example. It can be a concert location, which already brings a history. It can be, of course, a piece of music. And it can also, of course, be just like, you know, a moment that I thought, now this is the question of the time we are living in, and I want to artistically address this right. topic. And starting from these points, it's a big research moment, because of course if you are working on terms of identity, roots, home, nature, whatever it might be, it means that you have to really deeply understand what is it about and what is the connection in the music I'm going to bring. So, and what has maybe the music of the past to do with these contexts? And I think everybody can agree that Beethoven is a really relevant person with a really relevant music for today's world as well. But it's the matter on how we can build the context of this music from the past to the time we're living in today. And that's basically my aim and the starting point right. for a concert.
And how do you then communicate with a presenter who simply wants to fill the hall? What do you say to them? How does communication look like?
It's, I would say, a co-creational process. Of course, it's everything is about dialogue. And of course, our core element is the music in the end. And for me, for example, a concert always has to have something to say. And if we are like, when our common ground is we want to have this message and we want to have that our audience can take something out of this concert. It can be a person feels touched, a person has a question, or he or she is just irritated, you know, anything can be, but the concert has something to say. And starting from this point, of course, it's also about, okay, how many people maybe already know the pieces I'm bringing, how many are maybe completely new or coming from something else. So it's all about the balance. And of course, it's about, let's say, short-term, mid-term, and long-term goals of the concert place. And that's what we are discussing. And in this process, we are basically together forming this concert.
Totally. What do you think is very important for presenters nowadays? What are they looking for?
I think it should be both. Of course, it's not about like we stop the traditional way we perform. It's still important and it still has many people who wants to listen to it. But I think it's on the same time we have to create different kind of presentations as well to address a more diverse or more diverse society in this world, to offer both of these. And then on the one hand you have your traditional audience and on the other hand you have new audience, and in this concert together they can experience both. And for some of them it's something new, and for some of them it's something they already know.
Has there ever been friction between like your artistic vision, so to speak, and the presenter's expectations?
Of course there are. I mean, we are people from different backgrounds, from different cultures. We have different views and different opinions on things and on how we work together. But I mean, in the world where friction is, I think, a very natural thing and a thing we need to in order to get warmth out of it. And that's what friction is all about, you know.
Okay. But no one did not a concert with you because of, let's say, your more exceptional programs? Or has that also happened?
Of course, I think the main aspect maybe people are asking me is the way that I will program differently, or I will think of what is a concert or what can a concert be. and of course also who is coming to the concert. Right. And that's all about that we ask ourselves, who is our audience and what is our audience interested in? And this encountering moment, which is not a one-way direction, like I'm on the stage and I'm only sending, but it's I'm also interested in the audience and I'm willing to go to the audience also before the concert to understand who is there and
right.
who is coming.
To adapt a little bit to it.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's adapting, but it's encountering.
I see.
And it's a real encountering moment, which only happens in a resonating moment, which also only happens when I'm willing to be here and also to be, to give the hospitality here, you know, that you are welcomed.
Right, right. I think that just general, let's say, accounts you can pay in, right? When I think about how you can sell most tickets, essentially you have that brand of the artist. So the more, let's say, established the brand of the Igor Levit sells, right? Someone who is not famous doesn't sell. So that's one like thing, the degree of famous of the artistness. Social media reach also aligns with that, obviously. Then also the, like, let's say, what is the audience used to, which really aligns to what you were saying. So if you have, let's say, a very conservative audience, contemporary performing projects might rather pay on the account of getting maybe new people to your standard audience, but maybe the people who always come won't come because they're quite afraid of what they expect with the program, right? So that's a different allocation, obviously. But I think it's always like a mixture of different accounts, whether it's the brand or the monetary aspects and so on and so forth, that you just have to kind of mix in your whole concert season program in order to be like economically viable, essentially. I mean, let's come to you a bit, Gilles. You're active in a completely different market in Canada. In Europe, we always have that little more pessimistic feeling currently with budgets decreasing and everything's going so bad, right? But anyway, how do things look in Canada?
Well, we're all living in the same world. We're having the same tension. Even if we're in America, we see the world's changing so fast with the new technology and the hyper-segmentation of public and the hyper-increasing of diversity of programming structure. So give pressure to different public and programmers. So that's why we also see new emerging private programmer getting to the field.
Right.
But it's adding. It's not pushing out. You know, the history bring us to understand that it's not because of the technology arrived that we're losing the history. You know, we used to go to theater in the 80s, 80s, and then the radio arrived, and they were afraid that the theater would be, you know, lack of a public, and then the radio happened, the television, the film, but it's adding to the experience. So the same with the performing arts. Performing arts used to be city, national theater, but then we arrived to see, you know, new contemporary festival, new emerging artists, but it adding to the
right.
experience. Now, because of the lack and the cuts in the arts, some countries, now we see emerging the reaction that the private sector come and try to offer new way, new aspect. Also, the fact that, you know, the education, arts education in the school is cutting also. So now we see mediation, which actually it's the you know, education that was lack two or three decades ago. So the adaptation of the public and the programmer needs to respond to this new environment, right? So I think the economy of the performing arts is changing, but that adapting through years and the actual
That's a very bullish case. That's a very bullish case. I like that. But you're right. Like, basically, through technology, pretty much you don't need a specific venue anymore, right? Everyone can build something artistically, and this segment, obviously the segments of the market get bigger. However, I think, as we also had in the pre-discussions for that podcast today, you told us that there's more public funding available in Canada, which has like a huge effect on the programming, especially on contemporary arts, because let's be honest, contemporary arts is usually the thing which sells the hardest, right? Because it's hard to convince people to try out new formats, especially with a, let's say, rather conservative audience base. How is that set up?
Well, we're lucky, I think. You know, the Quebec Art Council are very close to the artists. We've been facing also the pressure of, you know, not cuts, but increasing of cost of travel, and you know, so we have all the pressure. And the actually the artists went into the streets for 2 years to ask to the Art Council of Quebec to have an increase, and we at the end have an increase of 15% of arts funding to artists. We went from 175 million to 200 million for 3 years. So it's fantastic.
What are these millions, like per year? I didn't understand.
Per year, and we are 8 million population in Quebec.
Okay, in funding which is basically available by the government.
The government gave to the artists now 200 million per year. For creating, for touring.
Yeah.
And it's an increasing of 15% since this year for 3 years and going for 3 years.
Right.
So
we have to add
the population.
We're
pretty lucky on that because in Quebec, we're not facing the same issue that you might have, you know, because the international touring in Europe, it's of course easier for you in Europe to tour by taking the train, let's say from Brussels to Paris. It's an hour and a half train, but from Montreal, we need to take the airplane to go to Paris, and we need to take the airplane to go to Vancouver in our own country.
Right.
So that your territory defines your conception of international touring. So the Canada is a large country, but it's an international conception of culture also. So we have not the same conception of the model of a contemporary performing arts needs to tour the world to keep alive our arts.
Totally. Gilles, you know what? You see so many pitches. You see so many contemporary performing arts ensembles pitching to get into programs. Like, what do they need to do to be on the programs?
There's no recipe. First of all, you need to be honest and know your artistic identity, because you cannot reach the world, but your identity will dialogue with the public and the programmer. So we know and we see that in the world there's segmentation of family of arts. A large theater with 2,000 seats, the programmer needs to fill the house. So he has all his criteria to find arts and project that will fill the house. But for now, you know, theaters for 100 seats, it's much more into intimacy and sometimes much more into a niche type of, you know, programming. So it depends on who you are, who you want to reach, who is your family, and go from there to grow. And you don't have to consider the success, the fame. The success come and go. You don't control it. But achievement of your process, artistic process, and be honest with whom you want to meet and the programmer you want to meet and the public you want to meet. Like what you're saying, dialogue with your community. So this is the success in a pitch. Know who you want to meet.
But I find it sometimes hard to grasp, right? And I think many people have that feeling that sometimes the market, and I love our different perspectives also on it, because I'm a very rational guy. So I think like, okay, I need to have X, Y, Z argument, right? And not like, yeah, you have to find kind of like a way. But I see what you're saying. I mean, still, I guess markets might work different. And I guess the less public funding is available, the more concrete things need to be, essentially, right, in terms of that pitch. However, I think, as we also had in our discussion, it brings us to the question, what should arts essentially do, right, in society? What's the function of artists and so on? Should they be even measured to return on invest, in a concert hall scenario, which is quite a different aspect, which we will also have as a provocation prepared in a couple of minutes. Though, maybe coming back to that Canada-European thing, what makes programs then programmable internationally? Like, what makes a program programmable internationally? Are there differences between, let's say, your market and the feeling that you get maybe here at Classical Next? What do you think?
I was afraid of that question. There's no recipe of it going international, you know? But of course, if you travel, it enriches your process of arts. And sometimes, you know, artists enrich their perspective when they travel. And then is there now a community of international programming? This might be an issue, you know, but I don't know where there's international programming that meet the sparkling unicity sometimes of an artist that reflect some of your issue of some part of your culture reflection. So yeah. This might be an aspect, but you don't control an artist to say, I'll do an international, you know, show with a concept of international. It doesn't work that way.
Right. And I think a lot is also how, let's say, a presenter does the what to expect story on their, let's say, channels. Most of the time you don't go to a concert, classical concert, because you don't know what to expect. Especially in my age group, like if I talk with people who are not in the classical music world, when I ask them what is the main reason why you never went to an opera or anything, that I don't know what is happening there, you know? I don't have like expectation management going on. And I think the more concrete, also visually, through the channels and so on, someone gets a feeling of what to expect, right? That heavily decreases the barrier for that first time visit, right? And I guess once that first time visit has happened, it's a lot easier to build trust with least effort by presenters. And that brings us also to the perspective, like what are the responsibility areas, right? So what is the presenter responsible for filling the hall, and what is the artist responsible for filling the hall, right? What's your perspective on that? What should bring the artist to the table? What should bring the presenter to the table?
Just before I answer the question, my thought on your, it should be as concrete as possible. I just had the initial thought that it depends, because we all know the phenomenon of sneak preview. I don't know if you know it in the cinemas, and at least where I live in Hamburg, we have always sold out sneak previews where people don't know what to expect. And I also know that the Elbphilharmonie, we have like those blind date concerts where there's no program at all, and they are always really well visited. So sometimes maybe it's also the myth of not knowing exactly what's happening that is catching the audience. Just a thought, thought to that. But to answer your question, I think that, of course, it's my responsibility, and I can also only talk out of my perspective, to bring the music in the highest quality, because that's, of course, all about the music in the end, and to offer possibilities where listeners, and I mean not only listeners as a group, but individuals, to find moments of connections and maybe also identifications in this program, which is then directly connected to music. And also that musical elements are directly connected to social aspects.
Right.
And also, of course, to the communities we are living in, and to the group, which is in this exact moment of a concert also a community, and to find out what is connecting us in diversity we are living here right now.
Right. I like the depth, like in the way you're thinking of a program. I guess most people just perceive it as music, but especially like how far you, maybe this is also part of storytelling that can convince people, right? And I think the more light you put on, the more successful. Anyway, what does a presenter needs to bring to the table? What's their job in filling the hall? What do you think?
Well, I'm not a presenter. Here are some in the room. So, but in my opinion, I think it's of course to, what presenters know better than me is of course their audience.
Right.
And that's an information I don't have, and for this information I need the presenter, because they know what the audience is looking for, what their audience is looking for, and what they need and what they're interested in. And of course they know the city or the village where the concert is taking place, and of course they also know the location much, much better than me. And with this information we can work together on a program, and I think that's especially this aspects are something, of course, a presenter, at least in my case, can bring into the corporation.
Nice. To just maybe add to that, we did a podcast, as I said, with Andreas Schessel from München Musik, who is pretty much one of the few completely privately funded, like, organizers, presenters in Munich, right? Munich, it's a little special city because the concert hall, you basically rent it. So there's no, I don't know the English word, there's no intendant, right? So you rent the concert hall, and all the money that you make is primarily coming from ticketing. Yeah, no other subsidies, no funding, and so on and so forth. And he said that, for example, for Isar Philharmonie, I don't know who has ever been at Isar Philharmonie. It's like 1,700 like seats or something. He said that he has to sell out 70% of the tickets to be break even. But his goal is to make money. So he probably should rather sell out 80, 90%, right? And he also sees every individual concert as a profit center. So he doesn't dilute. He doesn't say, okay, let's do five concerts that rather attract maybe new audiences and are less profitable, and let's do five concerts which is more standard repertoire, rather, you know, the cash cow, so to speak. And he says for every, like, say, program, there has to be, it has to be like profitable, essentially. And he's still doing a lot of, let's say, Lieder Abend, the chamber music thing, some experimentation thing might sell a little harder, and it works. So there are examples out there in the market, also completely privately funded for years, that show that quite nicely. Maybe let's now move forward with a little provocation, and I'm really excited on your thoughts on that. And that provocation, to give credit also to you, Gilles, came through the Zoom conversation we had a couple of weeks ago, where you basically, yeah, presented me a completely new perspective on argumentation or justification why arts and culture needs, let's say, like funding by governments. I'm coming completely from the private sector, so for me it's always a little bit like there has to be a very serious justification why people should get money for something from the state, right? And there has to be like a justification everyone, the taxpayer, can basically follow. However, that drastically changed my mind. So let's do that little thought experiment, right? So basically what you were saying is that, well, let's start from there. Every one of you knows research and development departments in companies, right? Research and R&D. Research and development departments are usually getting 10 to 15% of revenue of a company. And they are not measured in terms of direct return on invest. So what they need to do doesn't have to make money next month, doesn't have to make money next quarter. What they need to do maybe might make money or might secure the long-term existence of a company in 10 years. So that's their functionality, research and development. And let's now make the thought experiment that maybe artists are the research and development department for culture, and maybe essentially for society, can be the case. Because one can argue that the more diverse the artistic spectrum, the more programs, the more, you know, flourishing arts, the more enriched is culture, which has probably a net positive effect on the development and on the stability of a society, right? And that might be maybe the most logical justification why artists need financial security. Because why is that? would mean that the better our culture, the better our society, the more artists, like many artists, but that would mean that there's huge competition among the artists, right? And competition usually means that their individual salary is going down. So they earn less and less and less money if you do the trend view. And that would like put artists under huge financial pressure and essentially would have a very downward negative effect, yeah, on that thing. And you can basically only stop that by providing financial security to ensure artistic experimentation. Yeah, that's what it's all about. How did you came up with that idea and solution?
Well, the Art Council are there to ask to new artists to develop new way to create in their own discipline. Actually, in Canada, it's this way.
Right.
And we've seen, I'll give you an example. Cirque du Soleil, which you know, we're doing scouting around the world to find talents, find new emerging underground artists that were very sparkling. And they were inviting them to go on a board to brainstorm ideas to renew their shows. This is 20 years ago, okay? So by investing the young one to write new ways to create new, now we're getting into hybridity of writing because of the new technology, whatever. So the new young artists enrich the emerging of going through. You know, I'm getting you another idea. You know the courbe, I'm sorry, I'm French, the courbe of consumer of technology. early adapter, and then it grows. So the first 10% you understand what I mean?
And then it's exponentially growing.
Exactly.
Okay.
So that you need to invest in R&D, and then to see that you're maybe programming medium-sized theater contemporary, and after 15, 20 years, you're into the general public culture. So if you don't invest in the new emerging way of the voice of the young one, you won't get the richer, you know,
large public in 20 years. You invest, you don't see profits, and all of a sudden, it goes up and it's adapted by the market and perceived as standardized. I see what you're saying. Yeah. What's your perspective on that thing, honey?
Do you see
as an R&D artist?
No, I would even go a little bit further in the provocation and in thinking of in terms of who is an artist. And aren't we, if we understand, let's say, artistic or the possibility of being an artist is, I would say, basically in all of us, because it's the potential which is in every human being, which I believe, to be creative, then every one of us is potentially an artist. And if we then go a little bit further, that if we have more artists in or people who understand themselves as artists in society, would then not be our society or the world we are living in a better one, because everyone has the possibility to shape the world we are living in. And if we then go even further, then of course you can connect it to everything that you were talking about, like economical aspects, social aspects, political aspects. But I think we need to understand what is an artist or who is an artist, and if we understand ourselves as artists, then what are our responsibilities in shaping the boat we are in together right now in this crazy world?
Totally. Maybe let's put some positive light on things, which was also very important for us, right? To keep the panel kind of like, enlightening, like positive, cool, because I think that's the attitude we need in the market, even if the situation economically is not that perfect. One could also make, probably I don't make myself friends with that thing, but one could also make an argument that it kind of like makes the market better, in brackets, in terms of quality. Because as economic pressure rises, obviously, it kind of filters out maybe some projects that are not accepted in the current programming, right? And it's controversial to what we've discussed before, right? But still one can make that argument, right? It leads to a better artistic quality on the market. It might lead to that, it might not lead to that. We can also discuss what is better, what is worse in terms of that, obviously, but that can also be a side effect of the current situation. What are your thoughts on this? Honey, probably not a big fan, right?
No.
I was going to say.
Again, I would say, what is quality?
Right.
I mean, it's so individual what quality means. I mean, for some people, the perfect played Bach might be the quality they were looking for. But for the other person just sitting next to that person, for him or her, the quality was the whole total experience to have a nice evening with the friend. So the term quality is so different, and I think it's so dependent to who is coming, for what reason, and also what was the day before. So it has so many uncountable influences in it that I find it very hard to say this works and this works not, because also in my experience, this concert might work in this place but not in the other country, because cultural differences, difference of perspectives are there. And I have to think about that. And I cannot just bring one program here and the same program to the other country, because it's a completely different group, of course.
Totally. I guess also success is then retrieved by diversity of programs, right? And really like putting them into the right place, essentially. That's what it's about, right? And for that, we also need great venues. For example, there's Bergson in Munich, which is a great, they do that great. I don't know if you've known it, but Bergson Munich basically is a big venue with many like halls, and it's a great building. It's great architecture. You should check it out. It's also completely privately funded, and they offer anything from like Liederabende to heavy metal to raves, and it works. It's not that you go there and you have the feeling you compromise. Yeah, it really brings together very exciting audiences, and the conservative people are still happy going there, which is hard to do, right? But also some newcomers come and they experience maybe their first time classical concert. So it's really bridging gaps, yeah? However, that's really hard because infrastructure is not that quick to build, right? And it also needs obviously economic stability for it. But program diversification, putting the right program into the right place is probably what the market needs a bit more. Yeah, very cool. Okay, let's maybe finish this up with a positive outlook with a couple of key takeaways. I want to hear from both of you, like in that shift we're currently experiencing in the market, how do maybe perspectives of both the artist and the presenter need to shift just a little bit in order to come more to that intersection between artistic vision, artistic authenticity you can sell, and economic viability? What would you say are maybe some direct things that come to your mind on that end?
Well, I would say it's two different paradigms. Either you're working and you develop a project so that it's the break-even is for sure the object, or either your program more risky, you might say, or more niche project with a vision and a dialogue with a programmer and a visual and a vision of an artist and a niche of public. I think it's two paradigms.
But it comes down to the point communication, I would say, right? So there has to be communication between the artist and the presenter, as you also said, like exactly. In which venue are we playing? What is the audience? What might be like an interesting new thing for the audience? How can we co-develop it together? Yeah, and so on and so forth. So communication. Yeah.
Exactly. You need to know where you stand in your community, in your ecosystem.
Totally.
And if you know any programmer, artist, and public,
right,
and then you don't have the crisis of your business model. You know who you reach. You know the arts value you want to bring on the stage, and come with artists and the community. So it's and we're going into the complete changes of ecosystem because of the technology. The new generation and the new technology accelerate the way we write, the way we consume arts, the hybridity of tools cuts the linearity and the profound content, maybe. But then it adds also to the fact that new artists create non-linear arts, but much more conceptual, easy to understand, like TikTok. But it helps also the young one to get into conceptual writing. I'm sorry, I'm going somewhere else. But as long as you have a dialogue between who you are, your generation, talking to your generation, it will attract the new public.
Right. Honey, what's your...
I think it's all about the why.
Right.
Where we need to start from. So why do I program? Why do I do this job? Why am I a musician? Why do I need to play? So what is my really deeply inner need to go on that stage tonight to play for these people, and who are they? So I think it's not only artists and presenters, but we should not forget the audiences.
Totally. It's hard to add something to that, but my point is maybe a different method of measuring economic profitability in really the sense you're talking about. So not seeing every concert as an individual profit center, but rather saying, this is a concert which makes us a lot of money because of standard repertoire. This is a concert which brings us maybe new audiences and makes our program more diverse, but is maybe less profitable. So seeing that allocation aspect and measuring with a more bird's eye perspective, I guess that's also then how diverse programs even can exist, right? First of all, and maybe also make the cake of people who consume classical music just bigger, right? Which is, I guess, our common goal. Awesome.